all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Professor Jack Tsai. He is a professor of psychiatry. Jack, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to talk to somebody and get some data-driven viewpoints. You have a recent book that is coming out that you edited titled Homelessness Among U.S. Veterans, Critical Perspectives. So we'll talk about that in a minute, but let's start with Professor Tsai. Tell us a little bit about your educational background.
Well, so I did my undergraduate education in California. I grew up in California, and I went to a small liberal arts college called Pitzer College. And there I started getting involved in some – I majored in psychology, and I started getting involved in kind of psychological studies. And then I went to graduate school at Purdue University, based in Indianapolis. And, I got my PhD in clinical psychology there. And that's also where I became exposed and started to do some research on veterans. I did a couple clinical practicums where you get some clinical experience. And I counseled veterans at the Indiana VA there. And so I did some group counseling for veterans and also helping veterans find jobs, especially those with severe mental illness, get vocational rehab. So that really kind of just spur my interest in working with veterans. And then after my degree, getting my degree at Purdue, I moved to the East Coast where I did a postdoctoral fellowship at Yale and the VA. They're closely affiliated, the Connecticut VA and Yale University. And then I, after finishing my fellowship, I got some of my own grants and, got started on the faculty there. So that's where I am now.
And I believe you're on the Yale School of Medicine faculty. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I have a couple different hats I wear, but I'm associate professor of psychiatry in the Yale School of Medicine and also direct a Yale Division of Mental Health Services Research. And then on the VA side, I'm currently involved half of my time in providing direct patient care to veterans. Mostly those with severe mental illness and those that are at risk for homelessness. And then the other half of my time in the VA is spent doing research. I'm director of a research center I'm director of research at a psychosocial rehabilitation center called the Arrera Community Care Center in Connecticut.
I know our veteran radio listeners really appreciate understanding your connection and experiences with veterans. This sort of explains some of where you come from as we get into the whole question of homelessness. That's why I think it's critical for them to sort of understand what type of care that your direct patient care that you have with veterans, if you might elaborate a little more on that, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been drawn to really complex problems and mostly people that are suffering with tremendous difficulties in life. And so I started my career focused on severe mental illness, but oftentimes you focus on severe mental illness and then you realize there are other things that people are struggling with besides their illness. And actually there's a large movement in mental health to not just focus on someone's schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, but really what's important to the patients. And a lot of times the patients, they don't care so much about their mental health condition. They want to get a job. They want to have a high quality of life. And so that's when I started to think about housing, because a lot of veterans with severe mental illness have problems with housing. They're either homeless or they can't maintain stable housing. And so that's when I started to think about homelessness and starting to tackle that issue. So I've always been kind of drawn to complex problems. And homelessness is not something that's a specific condition. It crosses so many different health conditions. So it could be, you know, people that are have various medical, chronic medical conditions. It could be people with substance abuse problems. It could be people with severe mental illness, you know, that have problems with housing. And so I've been drawn to homelessness and also things like incarceration, where people are really kind of at low points in their life. And, I'm focused on, I'm very interested in helping those that need the most help, as opposed to those, you know, what sometimes referred to as like the worried well, where they're doing fairly okay, but they still have some more milder mental health problems.
Well, and we've certainly seen out of the war in Afghanistan more and more veterans who need mental health services, and various groups have tried to help out. Certainly the VA has had an increased effort, and it's had an increased effort certainly through the Obama administration of trying to eliminate homelessness among veterans. That seems like one of those goals you can never quite achieve, but a lot of money poured into the field over the last 8 years or so, hasn't it?
The VA has been very focused on homelessness in the past decade. In 2009, the secretary of the VA at the time was Secretary Shiseki under the Obama administration, and they declared this national goal to end veteran homelessness. And Secretary Shiseki said even at that time, this is obviously an ambitious goal to suggest we can end homelessness, but that he wanted to set kind of a really ambitious target with the understanding that it's very ambitious and it's hard to kind of end it, since homelessness among veterans has been really a concern for, you know, at least over four decades. But he wanted to set a high target so that we could really work to address it. And since then, the VA has invested over tens of billions of dollars for various programs and services for veterans.
And you, when you have that much money flowing into a program, one of the things the feds are really good at is collecting data and collecting information. And sometimes we all probably wonder, does anybody do anything with this? Well, we're going to get that answer a little bit from the work that you've done. So set up for a little bit of why it crossed your mind, hey, I want to tackle this enormous amount of data to see what I can learn.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of unique thing about the VA. If people don't know, the VA is the largest integrated healthcare system in the U.S. And because it's this large integrated, you know, network of medical centers, there's a lot of national data. And as a researcher, that's like, you know, that's like a dreamer. That's like a dream come true, because it allows you, you know, data on large numbers of patients. In these cases, they're all veterans. And if you have a particular question you can ask, you can look to the data to answer these questions. And so really the draw was there's this huge push by the VA to look at how to address veteran homelessness. The VA has some of the largest data sets on veterans who are homeless, and also the services that are available and which veterans use what type of services. So that was a real kind of no-brainer for me to look, use that, this wonderful resource to look at the data to help the VA address this major problem.
So could you explain the sort of the years and the numbers, sort of give our listeners a sense of the magnitude of the data that you were able to analyze?
Well, yeah, so there's, let's see, every year that says, at least in the previous years, there's been about 100,000 veterans that use services every year. So if you're looking at data over long periods of time, you know, you could be getting data on hundreds of thousands of veterans that use VA homeless services. And so that's, you know, that's really significant. And you can also compare it to veterans that aren't using homeless services. So there's about 6 to 8 million veterans every year that use VA services. So there's data on that many veterans as well. If you wanted to do certain analyses comparing, you know, homeless veterans versus non-homeless veterans on their use of various VA programs and services.
And can you explain to our listeners, Dr. Jack Tsai, what did this data, what conclusions or information could you glean out of this data?
There's a lot. For example, one of the things we've looked at is trying to understand who these veterans are. You know, presumably those that are using VA homeless services is representative of homeless veterans in general, but trying to understand, you know, their socio-demographic characteristics, what kind of mental health and substance use disorders they have. That would be kind of the start in the intake process, understanding who these veterans are that are using VA homeless services, but then also understanding what kind of services the homeless veterans are using and their outcomes. So what seems to work for whom? The nice thing about the VA, as I mentioned, is it's a comprehensive integrated healthcare system. And in terms of homeless services, there's a lot of different homeless programs available. There's ones like permanent housing, which gives you a subsidized housing, and it's kind of a permanent place to live, a permanent apartment, long-term with case management. There's other more transitional housing situations where, you know, a veteran could stay for up to a year or two, and then the idea is that they would transition to an independent housing on their own. There's also residential treatment programs where the veteran stays for usually only a few months at most, but they're receiving a lot of structured on-site care, and there's a lot of treatment and mental health and substance abuse treatment on the in the residential program, which are often on VA campuses. So there's obviously a lot of mental health and medical services that are provided in addition to some of these housing services. So with the data, you can look at, you know, with different kind of, there's really a lot of different kinds of homeless veterans from different backgrounds, and trying to understand, well, who seems to be, you know, what kind of services are best for whom? Because we're moving towards, you know, a broader movement in healthcare is precision medicine, trying to identify, you know, which services are best for what kind of conditions, what kind of characteristics, backgrounds, with the notion that, you know, not the same solution could work for everybody. So it's not a one size fits all, but that we really have to tailor care, which in the end also improves a lot of, you know, patient satisfaction. You know, the VA has sometimes been accused of not being tailored enough or, you know, sensitive to the needs of veterans and, you know, understanding that satisfaction is an important part of patient care. So certainly this would help, that effort towards, you know, tailoring care. And so it's more individualized and sensitive to particular veterans' needs.
We're talking to Professor Jack Tsai, a professor of psychiatry who has done a comprehensive analysis of VA data regarding homeless veterans. Jack, is there a specific type of veteran that you identified more likely to slip into homelessness than others?
Yeah, I mean, we've done a systematic review of the research literature, and what it's shown us is that there are several key factors, substance abuse, severe mental illness, obviously lack of financial resources or unemployment, and also lack of social support. But we found that of those kind of four, substance abuse seems to be the largest risk factor for homelessness, but also for subsequent homelessness after a veteran's housed. So, for example, I mentioned permanent supportive housing. There are veterans that, you know, get permanent supportive housing and they're housed in a Section 8 house unit, apartment unit, but they return to homelessness, and oftentimes substance abuse is the main factor for why they return to homelessness. So that, you know, brings up a real issue about when and how substance abuse treatment should be introduced and how that should be done, because there's a huge movement in permanent supportive housing to use a model called Housing First. I don't know if you've heard of this model, but it's the idea of not having prerequisites, but providing permanent supportive housing to homeless individuals immediately. So in the past, maybe a few two decades ago, housing services often used kind of a stepwise approach. So you might start with a more supervised setting like a group home or even a residential program, and then graduate to increasingly less restrictive housing settings,
to eventually the end, you get your own place, maybe through a Section 8 housing voucher. So you would have, kind of have to prove yourself that, okay, you could stay clean, you could stay sober, and you could graduate from, you know, different treatment programs to eventually getting your own place. But Housing First has kind of done away with that model where Housing First is focused on providing immediate housing with no prerequisites for, you know, attending substance abuse treatment or any kind of treatment, and not requiring this kind of way to prove yourself, but just providing immediate housing for folks, which has actually been shown in various clinical trials to be very effective. But as I mentioned, substance abuse is often a major factor for people returning to homelessness. So if you're using the Housing First model, it brings up the question, well, when should substance abuse treatment be introduced, or how it should be introduced? Because if it's not contingent on, you know, someone getting housing, then, you know, when should it be offered?
Professor, as you analyzed all this information, was there, did things come out of it that surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of surprising things. That's the nice thing about research. Sometimes you set out to study something, and other things pop up that you don't expect. And sometimes the unexpected findings are usually some of the most important ones. I mean, one thing, I don't know if it's the most important one, but something that I think is pretty important that we didn't really anticipate is that we studied how homeless adults do after they get after they're admitted to a supporting housing program, and then they stay in supported housing. Like, how do they do in terms of their mental health and also their quality of life and their social adjustment outcomes? And what we found is that permanent supported housing seems to improve people's housing outcomes, which maybe is not surprising, but it didn't improve as much people's mental health and also especially their social integration. So many people that get permanent supportive housing, they report feelings of isolation and loneliness, which obviously could trigger them to, you know, go down negative roads to, you know, substance abuse or returns to homelessness. And we kind of didn't expect that. We kind of thought once people get housing, everything in their lives would improve. You know, they would feel more social support. They would feel better mental health and physical health. But we found that many become actually more isolated. And it may be because, you know, homeless folks sometimes develop their own communities while they're homeless. And when you're placed in permanent support housing, sometimes it's a placement. You know, they have a voucher for you, but you have to be in certain neighborhoods. And so you might have to move to a new neighborhood that you don't, you know, where you don't know anybody. And also you might just feel really out of place having been homeless for a long time, being around, you know, people in regular communities and learning to interact with them. But maybe having some stigma about being homeless. So that was an unexpected, and I think that needs further examination. Because I've often said, if housing first is the model, we need to think about what's second, right? Housing comes first, but what's second?
Right.
You know, we need other resources to help make sure people are stay in their housing and they're living satisfying, productive lives.
Jack, as you went through this, did you end up making any recommendations, or subsequently have you made recommendations out of this work?
Yeah. I mean, as I mentioned, the VA has been very invested and very focused on addressing homelessness with considerable success. I think there's been almost a 50% drop in veteran homelessness in the past decade, you know, based on these point in time counts that they do every year. So I think one of the main recommendations is for the VA to continue, making sure that they, continue their efforts, so they don't lose progress. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes administrators and policymakers, there's a very heightened focus on a particular problem at a certain time, and they say, we're going to, you know, try to end this problem. But then after a certain time period, you move on to something else, and then you lose sight, or you lose the progress that you gained, when you were, because you moved on to something else. And so making sure that we continue to address veteran homelessness, because it's a problem that's persistent. And there are new veterans, a new generation of veterans, as you mentioned, coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And we really don't know the extent to which many of them may eventually become homeless. Because some people are still returning stateside now, or, you know, it sometimes takes we found for Vietnam, for example, it's taken sometimes a decade after Vietnam before people became homeless. So it wasn't that people immediately left the service and they became homeless. Sometimes they came back to their homes, and over a matter of years, they kind of spiraled down, because it does take a lot for someone to become homeless. If you think about the average person, if they lose their job, they don't even immediately become homeless, right? They might be able to garner social support resources. There may be other avenues where they could get, temporary support somewhere. But over time, over years, eventually you could get to the point where you really run out of everything and you become homeless. We found that it takes some time.
Were there other recommendations out of this work that you're sort of passing on to the policymakers, other than simply this important one, which is stay the course, don't lose the progress you've made?
Right. Yeah, we've been focused on a lot of other issues that intersect with homelessness. For example, criminal justice, making sure that those kind of barriers to housing, for example, having a felony, how to deal with that, and also how a lot of the more recent veterans especially are coming into contact with the criminal justice system, which could affect their ability to find housing afterwards. You being a lawyer, we've been focused on civil legal problems among veterans as well. So there's been a model developed called a medical legal partnership, and we have one here in Connecticut, which is basically a legal clinic embedded in the VA. So it's lawyers helping veteran patients with civil legal problems like child support payments, evictions, other kind of housing related issues, disability claims, and also helping veterans who aren't eligible for VA services get eligibility for discharge upgrades.
Right. Let me move to that before we run out of time, and that is, you've done a lot of thinking testifying about veterans with other than honorable discharges. Can you give us some of your thoughts about those OTH veterans and their impacts in this homelessness area?
Yeah, I think it's obviously a kind of a controversial issue, and I really can understand both sides of the argument. You know, there are those that feel like there are military personnel who didn't really serve and really should be called a veteran. And then, of course, there's the other side where I think I fall more towards, which is it's very hard to differentiate. You know, the military makes a very distinct categorization. They categorize people based on a certain discharge category. But oftentimes it's a very, it can be a murky area. There was a recent law, Yale Law School actually helped file a lawsuit for a veteran who was, I think he was dishonorably discharged, or he was under the honorable discharge. But he had symptoms of PTSD, and that resulted in the other than honorable discharge. And so it was actually the result of his war experience that resulted in having problems functioning in the military. So that in those situations, it's not clear, you know, it's not like there was misbehavior or some kind of dishonorable behavior. It was a result of mental health problems that resulted from his experience in serving in the military and serving our country. So I think it's challenging. But there are obviously veterans with other than honorable discharges that really they served honorably, but they had other problems that were a result of their service to the country, and they really shouldn't be punished for that. In fact, they should, you know, be able to use services, mental health services that they need. So Secretary Shulkin had passed a provision allowing veterans, you know, military personnel with other than honorable discharges access to emergency mental health services. And so that provision is now in place. So they're allowed to use VA services when they're in certain kind of mental health crises. They can also use vet center services as well. But research has shown that a lot of, you know, there's not that much data on veterans, on military personnel with other than honorable discharges. I mean, I say military personnel because some people, in some areas, veterans is defined as, you know, having a general or honorable discharge.
Well, I'm certainly using it in the broadest category, and I would agree. I kind of fall more in your camp that many of those men and women, you know, they had certain mental health problems, whether it was PTSD or bipolar or schizophrenia or something, was triggered by their service, and the result was a dishonorable or other than honorable discharge, and they kind of carry that badge of shame around for the rest of their life, and I don't think they should. They should get the benefits and the services that they need to get healthy. So I really appreciate Dr. Jack, say, you taking a little time with us today to talk about your book, Homelessness Among U.S. Veterans, published by Oxford Press. It's a deep look into the data that VA has collected, and this is an ongoing story. It doesn't end here because homelessness doesn't end here, and our veterans coming back with mental health issues doesn't end here. But the work that you've done and the advocacy that you do is well noted, and we really, again, appreciate Jack spending a little time with us today on Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me, James.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.